We're trapped inside the matrix. Forced to play our hand. We're filled with so much hatred. The kids don't stand a chance. 2:30 to 4, Monday to Friday. It is The Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Joining us over the phone lines today. He jumps on every week. Always appreciative for his time. Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated with us. He, of course, covers the Gophers for them. Find his work at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, thank you as always. I saw, we'll get to Iowa, Minnesota in a few minutes. I saw one of the Gophers' top commits for the class of 2018 has, I believe, reopened his recruiting process. It just so happens he's a quarterback as well. I know you're deep into the recruiting scene. How big of a surprise was this for Minnesota? Now, he could still go there, but it sounds like he's reopening his recruiting options.
Yeah, this has been sort of many months in the making between Minnesota and former quarterback commitment, Brennan Armstrong. Brennan wanted to be the only guy in this quarterback recruiting class, and then Minnesota gets a preferred walk-on commitment from former Mankato West quarterback Zach Anikstad. Brennan gets very worried about that, and then Minnesota starts talking to him about potentially also bringing in a junior college quarterback, because I think it's pretty evident to anybody who's watched a Minnesota football game this year, Connor Rota isn't the answer. Demry Croft is going through his struggles as well, and he doesn't exactly scream the solution. And then Seth Green hasn't done anything during his time here yet at Minnesota. So Minnesota really needs to bring in some more names. And on the other flip side of things from Minnesota, Brennan was suspended 3 or 4 games to start the season with a off-the-field issue. So there was, everything that's going in there. And then it's just a mutual understanding of sorts. This isn't a huge surprise, as it's been an ongoing conversation for many months. But the challenge now for P.J. Fleck is, how do you find someone an equal to, or if not better, of a quarterback with 7 weeks until the first signing day in December? And so you're going to see, I think, more and more quarterback offers go out. You already saw one go out to a junior college quarterback who is a former Michigan commit, a former California Bears enrollee. But I know PJ knows he needs to fix this quarterback situation, and it doesn't look like Brennan Armstrong is going to be the solution.
What does this do to their overall recruiting class for 2018 if Armstrong opts to go somewhere else? Because there's still a boatload of commits that they have, correct?
Yeah, they're still sitting with a top 30, top 35 class right now. Brennan, I don't anticipate him to sign with Minnesota. I know that he still is telling folks in the media world that he's going to take an official visit to Minnesota in December. I don't see that happening from the numerous different sources I've been told on that regard. Minnesota has already gone in a different direction than Brennan Armstrong. So this is still going to be a very strong recruiting class, still going to be the top one that Minnesota has signed in this decade. Now, there's a couple of higher-rated kids that they're talking to right now, and one by the name of Brevin White, I believe his name is. He's currently actually committed to Princeton, but he's a four-star. In this decade, he's the third four-star kid to ever commit to a non-Power 5 school. He had offers from Washington, Washington State, Utah, Tennessee, and him being a California kid, it sounds like PJ has been able to get some early traction there. So we'll see what he ends up doing in this 2018 class, but he's still got Minnesota on the positive direction in the recruiting world.
Just out of curiosity with Brennan Armstrong, what other schools had offered him or were showing a lot of interest or perhaps still are showing a lot of interest?
Well, I think another part of it that we can get into is Ohio State has been in his ear, but I don't believe it's genuine interest. And what I mean by that is the Buckeyes currently have, I believe, the top quarterback in the country committed, but that top quarterback just visited Alabama. So Ohio State's worried about, potentially losing him, and so they're talking with the two top quarterbacks in Ohio, one being Brennan Armstrong, formerly committed to Minnesota, the other one being a kid by the name of Chase Wolf, who's committed to Wisconsin. So I believe that, while he is getting some Ohio State interest, I would be very, very shocked if an offer comes. And I think that got in his head, too, in terms of, he thinks he may be able to get a Buckeye offer, and he wants to go visit them. And PJ is not huge on commits visiting other schools. So if he doesn't end up at Ohio State, which I think is still very unlikely, I'm looking at schools such as Cincinnati or Virginia.
A domino effect to this, I'm assuming, and I'm wondering how many tweets, emails, whatever, people reaching out to you, have you gotten a lot of those who are upset and blaming P.J. Fleck for all of this? It feels like those who are anti-P.J. Fleck, when something like this happens, would naturally just blame him for the entire thing, which is ludicrous, but I'm assuming you've gotten maybe some tweets or emails of that kind.
I do, and funny you mention it. I think I got about a group of between 8 and 12 people who are very anti-row the boat, and they think I'm drinking the maroon and gold Kool-Aid through my maroon and gold sunglasses. And so when this happened, between the tweets and the emails they sent me, I mean, it's just funny that people are just want a guy to fail so badly when, again, I still think that he can take Minnesota to new heights in terms of, you know, get to another New Year's Day bowl game, potentially win 10 games down the line, but it's going to take time. And so, yes, I mean, I see all the spewing anti-PJ Fleck in my mentions. And in my emails, it was very prevalent when this news broke. But again, unfortunately for people, I don't think the boat's going to be sinking anytime soon for PJ.
Ryan Burns, our guest this afternoon, always enjoy his time on the program. You can find his work. He covers the Gophers for Gopher Illustrated. Find it there at gopherillustrated.com. On the field, Minnesota, of course, lost to Iowa 17-10 on Saturday. Did the Gophers, in your estimation, did they throw it around more than you thought they would? Because I'm kind of stuck, because 15 pass attempts for Demery Croft against Illinois, I was like, come on, you got to throw it more. But 29 against Iowa, even though they ran it 43 times and had success with the ground game, I don't know, I just kind of thought they may stick with the running game a little bit more.
Well, they came out in the first quarter there and were just throwing the ball all around the yard. And yeah, hindsight's 20/20, and you see the lack of success that they had there, but some of that was because of drops. You saw that, I believe I went back and watched the film, and there were 5 drops from Minnesota, and 4 of those were in the first quarter. So Kirkshraka's game plan, trying to attack Iowa through the air, well, it doesn't help when, you know, 2 of the third down misses were drops that would have been first down extending drives. And it just, it was an interesting game plan, but I understood what Kirkshraka was doing. And the other thing was, Minnesota's receivers got absolutely zero help from the Big Ten officiating crew down in Iowa City, which I know is going to surprise no one. And again, I hate to be that guy. I mean, we always see that guy who's, you know, watching the game with us, always complaining about officiating. But, I mean, the Iowa defensive backs were basically able to get away with murder against these Gopher receivers. It's the same rules in college football as it is in the NFL, where there's no contact allowed 5 yards down the field. And there were many times where Tyler Johnson's trying to run a route. Say he's trying to run a post corner, so he's going towards the center of the field, and he plants his inside foot trying to break back out. And Josh Jackson, on 2 different occasions, I'm watching on film, grabs him by the back of the jersey because he's beat, and then he puts him on the ground, and there's no flag. Demery Croft throws it to him twice on that play, no flag. Minnesota's drive stalls. It was just mind-boggling, the amount of things that the Iowa defensive backs were able to get away with. But again, that's no surprise. Gophers are a road team in Kinnick. You're not going to get any calls there for whatever reason. But the passing game plan, I mean, you look at the statistics, you know, 9-for-29 for Demery Croft. When you factor in the different drops and the throwaways, it's not as bad as it seems. But, I mean, the facts still remain. Demery Croft now through 2 Big Ten starts, he's completing under 35% of his passes, and he's got more turnovers than touchdowns. So this quarterback position in the passing game is not trending in the right direction.
I was going to follow up and ask you to assess the play of Demery Croft, but you just did that for us. So we'll look at the running game. 15 carries for Rodney, 9 for Shannon, and 7 for Kobe. I know a lot of it is how the game unravels, and maybe sometimes you ride with the hot hand, but 15 for Rodney Smith, 7, or 15 for Rodney Smith, yeah, 9 for Shannon Brooks, 7 for Kobe McCreary. Is that how you thought it may shake out with those three?
Well, I thought it was going to be somewhere around there, somewhere between 10 and 13 touches for each. Now, again, you're a couple short on one end, a couple over on the other, just kind of how game flow went. And when you look at the stats anyway, between Demery Croft and Connor Rhoda as the quarterback, the running backs, you mentioned them, Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, and Kobe McCreary, are benefiting immensely from Demery Croft being the signal caller because he's mobile. And now Minnesota may not be running a ton of option, with Demery, but the running backs, when you look at their yards per carry, in their two starts with Demery Croft on 74 attempts, they're averaging 5.9 yards per carry. In the three Big Ten starts for Conorota, the running backs are averaging 4.0 yards per carry. So again, a 2 yards per 2 yards of difference is huge. Again, it's the difference between, you know, third and six and third and one. I mean, totally different playbook. So while the running game didn't really get off the ground necessarily against Iowa, the running backs are continuing to benefit from just a mobile quarterback overall.
Ryan Burns, our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz, AM 1450 KATE. Find his work, gopherillustrated.com. Flip side of the ball, how impressive was the Gophers' defense? I kind of look at two happenings, Ryan, and it was Iowa's opening drive score and then Noah Fant's long touchdown. And outside of that, I thought the Gophers' defense looked pretty dang good.
They did. You mentioned those two drives to open both halves. Minnesota's defense just can't figure anything out, and then you look at everything in between, and it's frustrating from that aspect, because if they're able to, you know, find any resemblance of a defense on those first two drives to start the half, I mean, and again, this is an even closer ball game. But Minnesota forces another two turnovers during the game, so they have 12 turnovers forced in their last four games. That's absolutely elite. I mean, you look at, especially with the situation they're dealing with in the secondary, four of their five starters from game one of the season were out against the Hawkeyes on Saturday. No Antonio Chenault, no Keandre Thomas, no Zoe Creighton. The top three corners from Minnesota are out. So you have third string safety Kunle Ayinde playing cornerback, and then true freshman Justice Harris got his first collegiate action. And, you know, again, I don't mean to, you know, look down upon a kid, but I mean, it looked like it, and Iowa knew it. And they went after him, and you saw that on the long Noah Fant touchdown. But Minnesota's defense being able to stop the run against Iowa with the secondary situation that they had was, I mean, a tremendous credit to Rob Smith. A huge credit deserves to go to him with the way that Minnesota's run defense has come back towards the mean, I guess, because you looked at the first three or four Big Ten games, Minnesota was absolutely getting gashed on the ground. They're able to limit the Hawkeyes to only 17 points. Under 4 yards of carry, and they played well enough to win. And it must be extremely frustrating for this defense as well, knowing that they have forced 12 turnovers. And the big issue from those 12 is that Minnesota's offense has only given them 34 points back on those 12 turnovers. That's less than 3 yards or less than 3 points a turnover. That's not going to win you many Big Ten games. And the lack of red zone efficiency from the offense continues to be a huge thorn in their side. Two red zone trips in the first quarter, 0 points. You look at the scoreboard at the end of the game, and it's being a 7-point game. Say you even get two field goals there, this is an entirely different ball game. So the defense continues to play well of late, and they must be looking at the offense with a little bit of disdain.
And certainly heading into the game, whoever plays Iowa, the opposition is always keying in on Akram Wadley. It's one thing to key in on him. It's another thing to try to contain or slow him down. Did you think the Gophers would be good enough to limit him to 75 total yards like they did? Just one reception for 5 yards for Wadley and 70 yards on the ground.
Well, I knew that if they were going to be able to do what they were, you know, able to put on tape on Saturday, their Minnesota safeties were going to have to play well. And what I mean by that is, yes, everybody in the front seven has to do their job, but in Minnesota's defense, they rely a lot upon their secondary in terms of being able to hold the edge on the outside. So the cornerbacks and the safeties have to come downhill, set the edge, and funnel them back towards the middle of the field where all the players are. And Duke McGee deserves a large credit for the amount of success Minnesota had in stopping Akram Wadley, because he was able to hold the edge multiple times, force him back towards the amount of jerseys that Minnesota had in the middle of the field. But I knew if it was going to happen, the safeties had to play well, and luckily for PJ, they did.
Up next in the Big House at the Wolverines on Saturday, Michigan made a quarterback switch against Rutgers over the weekend. It looks like Brandon Peters could be making his first start, and he looked good, but I do take it somewhat with a grain of salt considering it was against Rutgers and that Rutgers defense probably wasn't expecting to see him that much, I'd assume.
No, in that Michigan situation, a quarterback has been very perplexing to follow. This is the third different quarterback to start for Jim Harbaugh this year. And you look at, you know, let's look at their October. The Michigan Wolverines start their October with a close home rivalry loss to Michigan State. Then the next week they go on the road to Indiana and they barely squeak it out in overtime. Then they head to Happy Valley, and they absolutely get bludgeoned in a 30-point loss. And then last week, it's a get-right spot at home against a really bad Rutgers team. And so you look at the last four games, I mean, the legitimate kind of quality opponents, even if you think Minnesota's not nearly as good as Michigan State or Penn State, which I don't think they are, I think they can probably be equal to Indiana. And this is a team that, again, just took Indiana to overtime. So the big thing with Michigan all year has been their offense, and this is why they're playing their third different quarterback. Now, Minnesota doesn't have a ton of tape on Brandon Peters, but the big thing for me is, yes, you have to key in on Peters, but if Michigan's just able to run the ball all night, which with their big offensive line, that gives me a little bit of worry, we'll have to see how it plays out. But again, Brandon Peters is going to be an interesting thing to follow, because Harbaugh also said at his press conference on Monday that there's a 51% chance Peters starts and there's 49% chance John O'Korn starts. So Harbaugh loves to play mind games. So we'll have to see how it plays out come Saturday evening.
Only Jim Harbaugh, 51%, and then 49% for the other one. Spread is resting at 15.5 as of this morning. Does that sound about right to you?
Well, I know it opened at 14, and it's already jumped up now. I think Minnesota can – and the big thing about this is I don't think Minnesota's offense is going to have a lot of success. They haven't been trending in the right direction. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball very well at Michigan in the big house at night, and with, you know, Michigan probably keying in on let's stop the run, put 8-9 guys in the box, be physical with the Gopher receivers like Iowa was last week, and I don't know how Minnesota's going to score points, and I kind of agree with that. But I mean, the inner better in me says you have to take Minnesota at plus 15.5, because what if this game is just 17-3, or if it's 20-7? You know, I think Minnesota's defense can limit this Michigan offense to an extent. So, I mean, that's a big spread, but I like Minnesota here so far.
Keys for Minnesota will be what, and what matchups are you looking forward to watching on Saturday night?
Well, it's going to be the Minnesota offensive line versus the Michigan front seven. I mean, that's going to determine the entire game for me, is I know that the defense is going to do everything they can to limit Michigan to somewhere between 17 and 24 points. Now, can the offense put up anywhere between 17 and 24 points? And if that's going to happen, Minnesota's offensive line is going to have to win the point of attack. They're going to have to be able to move some of these bodies up front, including, you know, who's probably going to be a first-round draft pick next year by the name of Rashawn Gary, a gigantic defensive tackle. They have two very good linebackers there as well that I believe both have double-digit tackles for loss. Again, the Minnesota's offensive line is going to have to come out and play like they have the last 2 weeks, and if they show any resemblance of regressing or a little bit of fear, this is a Michigan defense that has a ton of great athletes on it. They have a lot of very good bodies that are still very fresh. So if Minnesota is going to be able to keep this close, they're going to have to be able to run the ball, they're going to have to be able to protect Demaryius Crofts, and they're going to have to win that point of attack for things to happen. And then on defense for Minnesota, they have to continue to be opportunistic. Again, 12 turnovers the last four games, three on average. They're going to have all of that, if not more, to try and give their offense the ball in plus territory. It's just trying to provide them a spark. So the defense has to continue to be opportunistic, and Minnesota's offensive line has to have their best game of the season.
Let's finish up picking some games. You went 2-for-3 last week. I informed you off the air before we hopped on. You're five games above 500 so far this season. You hit on Notre Dame last week. They were -7. You hit on Penn State. They were +6.5. You missed on Florida. Let me ask about Florida. What's going on with the Gators? Like, they get rid of Jim McElwain. I don't know how much of that was him. I know they had a ton of suspensions this year. Revolving door at quarterback. What's the future for the Florida Gators hold?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? The Georgia Bulldogs, who are, by the way, at number one in the recently ranked college football playoff rankings, they're above Alabama. Which I can understand why they did that, considering, you know, Georgia's two biggest wins are both road wins, on the road at Notre Dame and then on the road at Florida, and Bama hasn't really beat anybody. But, yeah, that Florida coaching position is going to be interesting, because I think folks forget Florida was in the SEC championship game two straight years. Like, they were in it 2015 and 2016, and now they just fired their coach halfway through their 17th season. That is, I mean, it's crazy to me to an extent, that this guy just led you to the SEC championship game twice, and now you're firing him halfway through the next season. So if I'm a head football coach, I'm a little bit leery of that job. But the two names I'm really going to be watching here are Scott Frost. I believe he's the Central Florida head coach. He's doing a great job down there. And then Oregon head coach Willie Taggart as well, someone that was the South Florida coach. He then took the Oregon job last year. He's got a very low buyout, and it would make a lot of sense for him to, if he wants it, head back to Florida and take over that Gators job. But it is very interesting times down at the University of Florida.
Florida not on our radar this week for games to pick, but one team that was on last week is on again this week. Number 7, Penn State. They're an 8.5-point favorite on the road at number 24, Michigan State. So who do you like there, Penn State, 8.5-point favorite?
Oh, that's such a big road favorite, especially with the amount of things that can happen. Penn State coming in after blowing a lead in Columbus. I mean, this could be a letdown spot, and Michigan State has been playing well of late. So I think I'm going to take Michigan State and plus 8.5. I think this is going to be a close game. I know that Saquon Barkley hasn't been able to get a lot going, and I know how good that Spartan defense is after seeing them at TCF Bank Stadium earlier this year. So I think Penn State wins this game close, but I think it's going to be much closer than that 8.5 spread.
Another home dog here. All three matchups that I'm giving you this week to pick are between ranked teams on both ends. This one, number 13, Virginia Tech, is a 2.5-point favorite at number 10, Miami. Who do you like there?
Yeah, this one is interesting because, again, Miami being undefeated on the season, and I know the big controversy last night with those rankings that were announced was Wisconsin's number 9, Miami's number 10, both are undefeated. But the comeback from the committee is, who have you beaten? And so if Miami wants to be seriously, taken as a contender here, this is a game they have to win. And, knowing that Virginia Tech has a true freshman quarterback, it's a little bit tough for me to think he goes on the road in a big spot and prevails here. So I'm not a huge fan of this line, so I'm going to take Miami here as the home dog.
Last one for you, number 11, Oklahoma State, a 2.5-point favorite at home against number 5, Oklahoma.
Okie-okie-homie State. Yeah, this one is going to be interesting. Can Baker Mayfield continue the magic he's had this season? I'm going to pick the Sooners here. Again, I think that this is a very talented Oklahoma team that wants to really consider themselves to get back into that top 4. So I'm going to say the Sooners go down and beat the Cowboys.
So you like them outright, because I do as well. They're 2.5-point underdogs, and I'm assuming that's because Oklahoma State's hosting. If it was at in Norman, Oklahoma's probably a 2.5-3-point favorite. I like Oklahoma to win this one outright as well.
I do as well, yeah. You and I are on the same page, and usually when that happens, people tend to win some money. So pay attention, folks.
He's got Sparty plus 8.5, Miami plus 2.5, Oklahoma plus 2.5. Find his work at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, as always, it's appreciated.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you next week, my friend.
We'll dissect and talk college football playoff rankings coming up next.